time is 10 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Next up, Puppet Radio Theater.
First, we've got some other things to talk.
KBOO Community Radio and Peña Flamenca de Portland are proud to co-sponsor Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. Pepe Rafael of Pepe and the Bottle Blondes will team up with Lily Last of Stomptown Flamenco for an evening of flamenco. Again, that's Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, located at Southeast 2nd Avenue and Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio proudly co-sponsors the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on Thursday, July 17th from 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. at Holocene, located at 1001 Southeast Morrison. This fundraiser opens with an ocean art show and silent auction, followed by a screening of the surf film Seven Signs. Then the reggaetronic five-piece band Everyday Profits takes center stage at 10 p.m. Again, that's the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on July 17th. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, this is Floyd from Puppet Radio Theater. I'm coming down with some strep throat, so this is very difficult for me to say. I just want to welcome everybody to a very special episode of Puppet Radio Theater. And it's very special because we're all here now, and we would love to hear from you. So if you'd like, you can just call us up. What's the number, Hayes?
Let's see. What's the number? 877.
She has to look at it.
500.
877-500.
5266.
5266. You can just call us up and, you know, we can talk. Anyway, this is the show.
Yes, enjoy.
Enjoy.
So goodbye, everybody, and remember, please, for the next day or so, the terrible lesson you learned tonight. That grinning, glowing, globular invader of your living room is an inhabitant of the pumpkin patch, and if your doorbell rings and nobody's there, that was no Martian. It's Halloween.
What's going on?
I'm not going out there. I'm not doing it this month.
Not doing what?
Doing another show. Let's face it. We're tapped out. We got nothing. Nothing.
We were a one-trick pony.
I like ponies. That's my favorite Art Garfunkel album.
That album came out after Art Garfunkel left Paul Simon.
Maybe that's why I like it so much.
Can we bring this back to me?
Yeah, what was your problem again?
Let me out of this bag. You two stink.
Radio Theater. Anyway, what was your problem?
It's almost the end of the month and we don't have a show yet.
Maybe we can do a best of greatest hits thing.
We don't have a best of. We'd be lucky to scrape together an hour of worst of.
That would work.
Come on, we must have some scripts somewhere.
I have a script for Vicodin from my vasectomy last month.
You should have taped it. That'd eat up half the show.
The nurse took away my camera.
Maybe we should sneak into Program Director Bush's office. People are always sending us stuff to play on the radio.
That's a good idea. I think I have a couple of hand grenades left over.
No way am I going anywhere near that woman's office.
Floyd, you sound scared. I've never heard you sound scared of anyone before.
Of course I'm scared.
I hear she once shot a man just for snoring.
I don't know what you're worried about. None of the humans at the station can see us, you know.
Rob Luker can see all. She sees all and knows all.
I never took you for a superstitious, God-fearing type. Besides, it's that or, hey, how about an all-music episode?
Come on, let's go. It'll be fun.
Okay, but I don't know about this one.
Hey, her door's open. I guess I can save these hand grenades for another occasion, like maybe the candy machine.
I want to go back! Let me go back!
Don't be silly, Floyd. She can't see us. Let's just go in there, take a few CDs, and then we're out.
Jeez, look at this place.
Is that a fountain over there?
So this is where all that pledge drive money goes.
Quiet! She'll hear you! She's in here somewhere!
What are you doing in my office, puppets?
She can see us! Get out!
Run!
Run! Come on, she can see us! It's impossible!
You're not going anywhere, puppets.
Program director Butcher. We must have taken a wrong turn.
Sorry to bother you. We'll be on our way now. Goodbye.
I think not. Tell me what you really came here for.
Well, program director Blucher, it's like this. We've been on the air now for 4 months. It's really a lot of work, and we were wondering if maybe we could take the month off.
Take the month off?
Yeah, well, you know, to recharge?
It's not like we have any listeners anyway, you know.
I'll tell you what we take off.
Hey, those things just got sewn back on.
And the felt nipples are just for starters. Mention taking off one more time, and I'll introduce you to my little friend, the Kebu Wood Chipper.
I told you she was scary. Why does no one ever listen to me?
I've got big plans for you, puppets. Shipments are pending. I've made orders. I've got a factory in Shenzhen working night and day on Puppet Radio Theater t-shirts. You puppets are going to make this station very, very wealthy. Now get back in that studio and put together a show before I sew your heads together with a damn needle.
Darning needle?
Damn needle, darning needle. I'll use a lit cigarette and a sharp stick if it'll get the job done.
But Perla through the Bluetooth, sir.
Ma'am,
we don't have any...
Out with it.
We don't have any sketches written for the show.
I was supposed to write something, but I spent most of the month playing Scrabble on Facebook.
Sketches? Is that all you wanted? Well, then why didn't you just say so? Here you are. This one just came in the mail from our Tijuana associate.
Me encanta Frida?
Hey, this is in Mexican.
I can read Spanish.
What are we supposed to do with a script in Mexican?
I suggest you find some Mexicans to perform it.
But where? We don't have enough time. We're doomed! Doomed!
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
What is she doing with her head?
I think I saw this in a movie once.
Damn it, that was my last piece of nicotine gum.
Come on, Floyd Hazel. I know where we can find some Mexicans.
Do a good job, puppets. My wood chipper is hungry.
Seriously, though, why does no one ever listen to me?
Too late for that. So where are those Mexicans?
We'll need to drive. I lifted the keys to the cable news van off of Director Blucher's desk.
To the puppet mobile!
Take that as a yes.
Lo siento por mi amigo. Elos un idioto.
Si.
¿Alguno de ustedes hecho acción, new acting?
A teatro? Oh, sure thing, Holmes. I played Buck in Midsummer Night's Dream for a couple of years before the teatro was shut down for health violations.
Theater, si. I did 2 years of summer stock in Guadalajara.
Great. Come on, get in the van. You guys are hired. This.
NBC presenta Me Encanta Frida.
Protagonizada por Frida Kahlo y Diego Rivera.
Frida, I'm home from the studio. Boy, am I starving. What's for supper?
I am an artist, not a cook. How should I know what you will have for supper? It looks to me like you could miss a few anyway, Senor Gordo.
Frida, my beloved and talented shrew, what is wrong with you today?
I was born to paint. I was born to bitch.
I have a surprise for you, my little pollo frita. Can you guess what it is?
A colorful ribbon wrapped around a bomb? A beautiful little gordito for my infertile womb? A lovely dagger so I can end this wretched, pain-filled life of mine?
Now I don't even want to give it to you. You're an accursed pox on my existence. You're not even worth the thought. What is that smell coming from our dormitorio? It smells like vodka. And Jew. Is that bastard Trotsky back? I'll kill the little Bolshevik weasel.
Now, Diego, remember your blood pressure. My grotesque, cuckolded husband.
Hola, my rotund brother Diego. I see that life has been very kind to you. And fattening as well. Well, no hugs or even hello for your landsman and old friend Leon. Coochie coochie.
Stop it, Leon. Stop it. You know how ticklish I am. Now look, I have wet myself.
What? Wait, what is this wah? I don't understand this wah. Oh, my back is killing me. Where's my morphine?
Cut. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Epic Career Failures of Cultural Icons.
This is your host, Walter Sasshole, saying so long until next time.
So long until next time.
So long until next time.
Next time.
Next time. Next time. Next time. Next time. Next time. Next time. Next time. Next time. Next time.
What's going on?
I don't want to do any scripts in Mexican.
What are you talking about?
What? Oh my God!
What's going on?
I had the most horrible dream, and you were in it.
Yeah.
And Lucky was in it.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, where's Lucky?
I don't know.
He's not here.
Mm-mm.
Maybe he went off to Mexico.
Okay.
He always talked about going to Mexico to find himself.
Maybe, but we're supposed to be recording a show.
Do we have any scripts written?
No.
At least the World Cup is still on. Let's watch.
Okay.
Ya cobra, pelota por arriba!
Oh, look at that.
Wow.
Yeah, this is an exciting sport.
I had no idea cable had so many cable channels.
Yeah, well, they're all the second-rate ones.
Are we going to watch World Cup the whole show?
If they ever start playing again, this guy just is yelling.
I think he's like the highlights.
We've got a new channel called ESPN2. ESPN2 shows the other sports that the rest of the world likes that we don't even understand here in America.
Oh, okay.
Let's switch over.
All right.
Brad Apex and Tammy Stone here in spectacular Guatemala City, Guatemala, host of the 2013 Paralympic Games. Of course, it almost wasn't meant to be, Tammy.
Yep, Brad. 3 years ago, Guatemala City barely beat out Darfur, Sudan, Lagos, Nigeria, and Pyongyang, North Korea, countries that haven't medaled in the regular Greek Olympics in at least 68 years. North Korea's last medal, in fact, was in the 32-man bobsled race, an Olympic event canceled immediately after its victory.
You got it, Tammy. And to think about this year's Paralympic Games, if the drug cartels hadn't started transporting huge quantities of drugs through Guatemala up to the U.S. a few years ago, this already poor, fragile, totally corrupt country might never have had its chance in the sun.
Let's go over to Stephanie on our sonic-powered triple rotor stealth drone copter cam. She's following the 500-mile dash to the border event, sponsored by the new Nike Air Max running shoe.
Yes, Brad and Tammy. We're high up in the air here at mile 499. These teams of 1,000 contestants have plenty of experience fleeing evil dictatorships. Just look at those Palestinians moving across this flat area. Need to be pretty quick to avoid all that political violence back home.
Nobody politely knocks on your door before they bulldoze your street, do they, Stephanie?
Oh, they sure don't. But check out that Syrian team catching up from a refugee camp in Jordan right here to the highlands of Guatemala without missing a beat. Must be something about this beautiful Central American country air that makes families want to run and run. One has to wonder if fear should be considered a performance-enhancing drug, eh?
I'm sure the folks back home will want to keep up with that controversy, Stephanie.
Hold your horses, guys. The Palestinian team regained the lead and is sprinting across the finish line. They've all won gold!
Sir! Sir! Don't run away from me! You won, sir! Let's get this thing on the ground. Sir! Sir! Yes, you! Stop running! You've actually won something, sir! Sir, stop!
I don't know why I'm running! I heard helicopters!
Ah, don't worry! That's just for the telly! You're famous! I just want to know what you plan to do with your Paralympics gold medal.
Well, I would put it up on my wall back home if I had a home with walls to go back to.
Thank you so much for that touching soundbite. Back to you, Brad and Tammy.
And we're back. The Paralympic Games are right here, right now, in gorgeous Guatemala City, Guatemala.
The Paralympics are pretty special, Brad. Today, we are witnessing the riveting gold medal round of the men's fasting competition. The remaining three Paralympians are Jose Martinez of Colombia, Joaquin Nugala of the Ivory Coast, and Teddy Nguyen of Vietnam. Let's go over to Carl, our correspondent at the long table, where the world wants to see which contestant survives the longest. Carl, what can you tell us?
Wait is the key word, Tammy. These finalists have gone their whole lives without eating much. Teddy Nguyen of Vietnam grew up homeless and says he came to hate food from all the boiled shoe leather he was fed.
How did the contestants get to this final stage, Carl?
It all started in the Paralympics fasting trials 3 years ago. The field's been whittled down quite a bit.
Keep us posted for any developments. And by the way, Carl, have you tried that juicy porterhouse steak back at the hotel?
Crusty and tender at the same time. Yum!
Now a break from our sponsor, Monsanto Pesticides, Herbicides, and Other Fine Chemicals.
You know,
Monsanto,
eliminating
small farmers' choices.
I don't care what it's like, especially not for Monsanto. What are they going to do, talk about screaming carrots?
No doubt.
You know, I trust Monsanto, though.
Actually, you know, they know what's best for us.
They know what's best for us, and they know how to make food and how to poison it.
Exactly. Poison it in the most delicious way.
Mm.
Anyway.
Let's switch back to the World Cup. Sweet Jesus, is this the same guy?
I don't even understand.
You know, I've noticed that Monsanto has never made a commercial. Why should they? It's not like people have a choice.
Oh.
Their whole commercial could be, Monsanto, because you have no choice.
Right, buy our food or we'll steal.
Eat Monsanto or starve to death.
No doubt.
All right, let's go back to the Paralympics.
And the Paralympic Games continue right here in the marvelous metropolis of Guatemala City, Guatemala. We now go to our shot put event and our correspondent right smack dab in the middle of the action, Bert. This event has been a fan favorite, but the gold medal race here is becoming, as you say, clear as mud. Explain, good sir.
That's right, Brad. Very early on in the competition, the shot put balls were stolen. Most suspect the Highland Rebels, or that the government melted them down for weapons.
And didn't they fly more in?
Of course they did. And of course, these were stolen at customs. Over the past few days, we've seen vast swaths of territory changing hands. In response, all the participating countries have resorted to throwing mud balls.
Wowie, wow, wow. Who leads the shot put contest now?
Russia. In an unprecedented move, President Putin has fired the Russian team, become the sole contestant, and bribed several judges.
Bert, Tammy here. Stupid question. But they can't give the gold to one of the warring factions, can they?
Not this time around, anyway.
Golly, golly, Bob Bolly, Bert. Thanks for giving us that report and surviving. No small feat there.
Now let's get a quick update from our rickshaw pull final. Our correspondent Stephanie is there to report on a new world record.
Unbelievable, Brad and Tammy. Laos took things to a new level. The unnamed Chinese contestant thought he'd won gold by carrying 8 overweight tourists across the finish line. But Laotian Havika Sayavong said, no way. Not a chance. Don't even think about it. Across my dead body. 9 overweight tourists.
Hot diggity wiener dog.
Holy Mary, Mother of God and Pedro.
Sayavong carried 9 overweight tourists across the finish line.
Was it a touchy medal ceremony, Stephanie?
He'll have to get out of the hospital first, Brad.
Sounds like a good time to hear from our event sponsor, Lexus, presenting the Lexus 3000.
And I'm not going to watch a commercial for Lexus either. Switch over. Is this the same announcer and the same goal?
No wonder the World Cup lasts so long.
You know what? I'm kind of running out of energy. I'm going to have a little... I'm going to have one more sip of Highball Energy, sparkling energy water. The new official sponsor of Puppet Radio Theater. Zero calories, zero sugar, and some form of hallucinatory drug that is actually causing me to go mildly insane right now.
Welcome back to lovely Guatemala City, capital of Guatemala and host of the Paralympic Games, opening up the world field for the other 150 countries, nations you may not have heard of, like Burundi and Toto. Let's go to our second-to-last event of the day, Tin Shack Construction, brought to you by HGTV. Molly Gangstar is on the ground for us. Molly, this event is based on speed. What advantages do perennial winners like the Congo and Sierra Leone have over other countries?
The biggest shantytowns in the world, Brad. Corruption, mechanization of farming, and rampant urban unemployment give contestants from these countries plenty of practice.
Not to cut you off, Molly, but I will. We'll move to the final event of the day, the Sisyphean Boulder Push. We haven't ever had a winner in this category, but Eddie Urgent has a more complete story.
As far as gargantuan effort and number of epic fails, no country has done better than Ethiopia. Although they've gotten tight competition from Somalia and Haiti, including what appeared to be a complete push to the top for the Haitian team back in 2011. Not only did the international team of judges deny their effort, but the boulder rolled completely to the bottom of the hill again, crushing 17 members of the Haitian team.
Oh, a big shucks on that one. And I think they had an endorsement deal in the works from Caterpillar.
Since we're getting close to the end of the games, we wanted to visit the Paralympic Village with our trusty correspondent, Carl, to see how the preparations for the closing ceremony are going. Carl, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Carl, come in, Carl.
Yes, I'm still here.
Carl, we're having some technical difficulties. Hold on.
I'm definitely here, Brad and Tammy.
Carl, that you?
It is me, Brad. Keep that chiseled jawline still for just a minute. I am at the entrance to the Paralympic Village, but it's been completely cordoned off due to a cholera epidemic.
Oh dear, what are they doing about it?
The international community has already swept into action. The U.S. has pledged to airlift a case of Top Ramen and buy one, get one free Big Mac coupons in exchange for three oil-rich northern provinces, while the U.N. has pledged medical support for everyone in the area as soon as the cholera epidemic has completely ended.
Holy smoky badoki. I sure hope they figure it out, Tammy.
Me too, Brad. Nobody wants to be collared by cholera. Should be interesting to see what country is selected to host the next Paralympics. The finalists include Myanmar, Liberia, and Arkansas.
And that does it for this broadcast of the Paralympic Games from Guatemala City. We now resume broadcasts of our regular programming.
All right, let's see what's going on with the World Cup. Wow, the World Cup is over. Guess we missed it.
Who won?
I don't know, but it was a high-scoring game. It was 2-1.
Oh my God.
That's a pretty high score in football, or soccer, as they call it in the rest of the world.
No doubt. Riveting.
You know what I miss? You know what I miss? I miss Game of Thrones.
Totally miss Game of Thrones.
I mean, you know, every time it hurts me, I sort of say, never again, and I try to leave, but then it calls me back.
And you think it'll be better this time, and you're sucked in and start watching again, and then something horrific happens, and then it's ruined all over again.
It just hurting me and hurting me, but I can't say no whenever he calls me back.
Exactly. There's a honeymoon period where it's going to be nice again.
Yeah. There ought to be like some sort of a TV viewer shelter where people who have been abused by Game of Thrones can go and be safe from Game of Thrones.
Like a support group for Game of Thrones viewers.
They have a new spin-off.
Oh, really? Okay, because the new season's not going to be for like a year,
It's sort of like methadone for Game of Thrones fans.
And so your theory, Elbenshire, is that the boy slipped from the tower following a surprise of some sort?
Quite. By all accounts, he was an excellent climber, but an unusual sight. Perhaps that of a dwarf in the throes of coitus may have been enough to cause him to misjudge the distance between handholds. But until the boy's parents answer my letters, it's all mere speculation. In any event, Watsonford, let us turn our attention to the matter at hand.
Indeed. A dozen plus members of a groom's party turn up dead mid-wedding. The host, the bride's father, a man known to have something of a conflicted relationship with the groom's family, claims the deaths were due to a combination of drunken ribaldry and bad salmon.
I suspect there's more to the story than that.
Hermanshire, you don't suspect foul play at a wedding? Here in Westeros?
Indeed I do, Watsonford. That's why I'm calling this case The Mystery of the Red Wedding.
And I will get to the bottom of it. After all, am I not? Shelby Hermanshire, Detective of Westeros.
Lord Frey, so kind of you to take the time to speak with us, especially given the nature of the tragedies that have befallen your household recently.
Yes, my daughter Rosie had so been looking forward to her wedding.
Quite. Most girls do. Still, my colleague and I have been sent from King's Landing to investigate the circumstances surrounding the tragic events of that evening. You don't mind if we look around, do you?
Of course not. The Freys have nothing to hide.
Watsonford, have a look around, but do be discreet.
Of course, Hermanshire.
Lord Frey, according to the official story that's made its way by crow to King's Landing, your daughter Rosalind and her new husband, Edmund, had just completed their vows, and the party was underway when the accident occurred.
Yes, Inspector. Real tragedy, that. I have to admit I'd had a few that night. My memories of the event aren't as clear as they could be.
Well, that's fine, that's fine. Tell us whatever it is that you can recall.
Well, it's like this. Robert, like a son to me, poor lad, was on his fifth flagon of mead. I told him to slow down, but you know how boys are. One of the other lads told a rather bawdy joke, causing poor Rob to choke on a salmon wedge. His mother, Catelyn, she'd also had a few that night, being a recent widow who could begrudge her, tried to help her son dislodge the offending fish with a salad fork and, being drunk, ended up slipping and cutting her own throat.
I see. But what of Robert's new bride? I believe she was a fatality as well.
Beautiful girl. Real tragedy, that. We believe her death was due to shock, that and complications due to an early labor. She might have had some of the salmon herself.
And what of the other victims?
I'm not going to lie to you, Inspector. There'd been quite a bit of drinking that night.
And the men of the North are not known for their great love of temperance. But be that as it may, Lord Frey, the body count was quite substantial for a wedding.
Hermanshire, would you come over and look here?
This stain on the ground indicates that there had been a large pool of blood here. Cleaned up, but not fully. My keen powers of deduction tell me that this stain occurred around the same time as the wedding.
Yes, that's precisely the spot where young Rob had his accident with the salad fork.
And what of the blood stains to either side?
Easy enough to explain. In his flailings, he wound up striking several of his dining companions, also members of his wedding party, adding to the tragedy for my poor, poor daughter.
Hermanshire, come quickly! I've just found this crossbow bolt lodged in a table. And there's another. And another. And another.
Keen observation, Watsonford. Keep it up and you might make inspector one day. Crossbow bolts aren't the usual sort of item one expects to find embedded in furniture following a wedding. Wouldn't you agree, Lord Frey?
Now, now, Inspector. Let's not jump to any hasty conclusions. I can explain. This great hall also doubles as an archery range. Mine is a poor family, often forced to improvise when it comes to recreation. And it does rain so much in these parts. My children can hardly be expected to practice outdoors.
Reasonable enough. Watsonford, I believe you owe Lord Frey an apology. Oh,
terribly sorry, my lord.
Quite all right. You were just seeking justice.
I suppose now would be an awkward time to bring up the matter of the dog's head.
What was that? Speak up.
The dog's head that was sewn onto young Master Stark's body.
Ah, yes. I'd almost forgotten about that.
I have a reasonable explanation for that. Seeing that Robert, who again was like a son to me, would not be revived through traditional methods, in desperation I had his dog brought in from the kennel in the hopes that, perhaps through some miracle, the dog might revive him. Rob loved that dog.
The mysterious healing power of animals is well documented. Still, that the dog's head was later found attached to the body of the deceased does raise certain questions.
Well, as I mentioned before, there was a fair amount of drinking that night. There's a long history of pranks between the Freys and the Tullys. I'm not proud of it, but there you are.
So, what you're saying, Lord Frey, is that young Robert Stark, drunk at the wedding, began choking on a wedge of salmon. His mother, herself half in the bag, attempted to address her son's distress with a salad fork, only to slip and cut her own throat with said fork. Other members of the Stark party, in a drunken attempt to assist both mother and son, wound up instead inflicting multiple stab wounds on each other, leading to their premature expirations. Rob Stark's dog was brought in to help revive its master, only to somehow wind up having its head surgically attached to the lad's shoulders as part of a youthful prank.
Yes, Inspector, that's exactly how it happened.
Lord Frey, was there any animosity between yourself and young Robert Stark?
Animosity? No, no.
Perhaps owing to a certain engagement promise made and later broken by Robert Stark?
That? I'd almost forgotten about that. Anyway, it was all water under the bridge by then.
Or was it? I'm going to offer another scenario. Watsonford, take note.
Yes, Holmanshire.
Although you claimed to harbor no ill will towards Robert Stark following his disengagement to your daughter, in fact, you did. Watching the wedding between your daughter Rosalind and Edmund Tully reawakened this old wound, which stung all the more as the party progressed. As you became increasingly drunk, you began quarreling with young Robert Stark. After a particularly heated exchange, you leapt from your chair, stepping here and then here, not with a salad fork, but with a meat fork.
Ha! Smashing good deduction, Holmanshire. How could you possibly know?
Elementary, my dear Watsonford. There's no way a salad fork could account for this much blood. Isn't that right, Lord Frey?
You can't prove anything.
Oh, but I can. Seeing you stab her son with dinner cutlery, Lady Catelyn attempted to retaliate with a butter knife. Owing to drink, the hem of her dress became entangled, causing her to fall throat first into the very knife she intended to use on you. Seeing this, the wedding party fell into chaos, with guests stabbing hither and thither until a dozen or more lay dead.
Smashing work, Holmanshire! But how do you explain the dog?
Simple observation, Watsonford. I noticed several hound hairs lodged into the crack of this wall near the spot in which Rob Stark breathed his last.
But why?
Because you, my dear Lord Frey, feeling a sudden twinge of regrets for your overreaction, attempted to set it right by summoning a surgeon. But at that time of night, finding a doctor was impossible, forcing you to make do with the village veterinarian, himself half in the bag, owing to the late hour.
Of course, Holmanshire. That would account for the strange Sir Jericho melding.
Quite.
You found me out, good man. So what's to become of me? King's Landing to stand trial?
I wouldn't go that far, old bean. You are a lord, after all. Though based on my investigations, you may find yourself facing charges of accidental manslaughter, and perhaps even egregious mischief. A man of your standing ought to get off with community service. I'd suggest that you enlist the services of a talented solicitor.
Excuse me, Holmanshire. So sorry to interrupt your reveal, but it seems that this crow has come all the way from King's Landing for you.
Well, don't just stand there, Watsonford. Read the note.
Oh my! It seems that there has been yet another wedding-related fatality. This one involving the royal family and an oddly bird-filled cake. Do you suspect foul play?
Let's not jump to any conclusions, old bean. Still, it would be best to make haste to King's Landing. Lord Frey, it seems as if more important matters require my attention. You're off the hook for now, but rest assured, I'll have my eyes on you in the future.
Of course. I see now why they call you the greatest mind in Westeros.
Indeed they do. Come along, Watsonford. We have a new case. This one I think I'll call The Mystery of the Purple Wedding.
You know, that hurt. It hurt me, that one, but it didn't hurt nearly as much as an episode of Game of Thrones.
I think this is going to be a hit, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I am totally hooked. I can't wait to see where he's going to go next.
I like Benedict Cumberbatch.
That's right.
Is it Benedict Cumberbatch or Benedict Cumberbund?
Batch.
I don't
and
know.
And Martin Freeman.
You know what I liked the best about this particular episode? The British accents. They were just spot on.
Superlative.
Superlative. That's exactly what that would be called. Want a sip?
All right.
Go ahead.
There you go. Yeah, that's the stuff.
Highball energy drink.
My little googly eyes are all shaky.
Oh.
All right.
Is this a Soylent Co. product?
It should be.
It should be. You know, we ought to talk to our masters at Soylent Co.
Yes.
Speaking of which, www.soylentco.com, the new home of Puppet Radio Theater.
That's right. Yeah. Bookmark it.
Anyway. There's apparently some sort of rock and roll tell-all. Some behind-the-scenes rock and roll show.
Ooh, behind-the-scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, those are fun.
You know, I like to find out what, you know, dirty, juicy things that rock and roll artists do when they're not rock and rolling.
Well, you know, I just watched something. The Doobie Brothers were pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knew?
You know what was nutty? Ginger Baker.
Yes.
You know, if Ginger Baker were here right now, he'd probably be beating the two of us senseless.
I don't think he was nutty so much as mean.
He was mean and nutty, but he was an excellent drummer.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I think it would be funny if he were to play with, like, who was that guy that you like?
Paul Simon?
Not Paul Simon.
Dave Matthews.
Yeah.
I like Dave Matthews.
We should start a petition. Ginger Baker should play with Dave Matthews.
That would not go well.
Yeah, I think that they'd get along really well.
Could be BFFs.
Anyway.
Behind the music?
She sold more than 75 million albums worldwide. But beneath the ethereal piano solos and multi-layered vocal tracks lies a more complex persona. Today on Behind the Sound, Enya. Enya was born Ethna Ní Briainin in County Donegal, Ireland. The sixth of nine children from a revered musical family, Anya soon revealed a talent that impressed her lyrical siblings, but her go-it-alone style proved less than harmonious. Behind the Sound spoke with Anya's sister and former bandmate, Moya Brennan.
Even in the early days of the band, Anya was never what you'd call a team player. We all wanted to be on stage, of course. We were a musical family. But Anya wanted the stage all for herself. Sometimes in the middle of a performance, she just launched into an unplanned vocal solo, you know, for 8 or 9 minutes. Nothing to do whatever with what we were performing. Strange languages, too. Elvish? Klingon? Sometimes I think she was just making it up.
Growing increasingly frustrated with their sister's linguistic eccentricity, in 1984, the other members of Clannad simply stopped telling Anya about upcoming performances, freezing her out of the band. It was a resentment that Anya would never let go of. As her solo career took off, Anya never again performed with her family.
Look, I'll be the first to admit that the way we handled letting Anya go was wrong. But the way she treated us as her star rose and ours fell. There were some lean times for Clannad. We gave Anya her start. You think she could have returned the favor? At the very least, maybe let us do some of the backup vocals on one of her albums. Did you know Shepherd's Moon has over 500 layers of her own voice? Who layers their own voice 500 times without thinking of their family?
Anya's meteoric rise to the stratosphere of the New Age charts came at a price. Anya found herself relying on increasingly frequent doses of homeopathic medicine. Anya's former producer and manager, Nicky Ryan, spoke to Behind the Sound about his role in Anya's addiction.
I'll always feel guilty for introducing Anya to the flower essences. It was the 80s, of course, and everybody was doing them. A drop of scarlet monkey flower for anxiety here, 2 drops of cosmos for inspiration there. During the release of Watermark, I noticed Anya seemed ungrounded, so I gave her a couple of drops of white chestnut before an interview. I'd no idea she'd start abusing the stuff, taking 5, 6, or 7 different tinctures at a time. She was out of control.
But her audience knew nothing about Anya's struggle with homeopathic medicine. All the world seemed to care about was the dulcet melodies of an increasingly introverted New Age diva. As demand for Anya grew, her demands on venues became increasingly bizarre. Behind the Sound spoke with Al DeMella, head of catering and talent management at New York's Carnegie Hall.
I'm used to rock and roll stars that are crazy riders. A bowl of M&Ms, all the red ones taken out, precise number of flower petals floating in the tub of pastrami in the dressing room, a bronze chocolate fondue pot cast in the exact likeness of Lyndon Johnson. But Anya, she went too far. Said she needed her dressing room arranged by her personal feng shui consultant, someone named C.F. Wong from Hong Kong. She insisted that crystals be placed at cardinal points throughout the room, something to do with an astrological phenomenon. But the real kicker was her drinking water. She made us fly in, at our own expense, 10-gallon drums from a small village in India. The water had been harvested from children's tears. She said it was the only water that had the proper vibrational frequency for her to drink, something about classical music being piped into the local orphanage. Of course we complied. We had to. She was Anya. But getting the water flown in took an extra few days due to a flood in Mumbai, and in the end, Miss Anya canceled. Apparently she doesn't fly during the waning moon.
But rigorous feng shui demands were just the tip of the New Age iceberg driving a wedge between Anya and the rest of the world. Anya's need for artistic isolation led her to build her own private Oz, whose yellow brick road only a select few were permitted to follow. And these select few had to follow the rules.
It was always Anya's way or the highway. During the 3 years I worked as her personal assistant, I was in a constant state of fear. She would make these insane demands on me, on all the staff. 1 year, she instituted a new rule that everybody who worked for her had to dress like the weather. Nobody in the castle knew what that meant, but Anya never clarified anything. We tried to figure it out, wearing gray on rainy days and so on, but it was impossible. One day, there was hail, and the chef was wearing a cream-colored apron. We never saw him again. She was a very private person, but also incredibly demanding. I had to practically be invisible and ready to leave her presence at a moment's notice. Everyone who worked for Anya knew that when the boss said sail away, he just sailed away.
Every time Mercury went into retrograde, she insisted the staff take a vow of silence. For weeks, nobody would speak, even when she wasn't around. Everyone knew the walls of Enya's castle had ears.
Enya's increasingly eccentric behavior was apparent to other celebrities. In 1996, Enya became involved in charity work with U2's Bono. Their professional relationship soon soured amidst charges of one-upmanship made by the veteran musical do-gooder. Behind the Sound spoke to Bono by satellite phone from a remote village in Nepal.
Look, Enya's heart is always in the right place. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've always had respect for her and all that. But keep digging, man. There are children buried under the rubble in that collapsed school building. I can feel them in my heart, crying for air. Little hands scratching against rocks and stones. Wee mouths gasping for air. Dig, man. Go on, dig. Jesus. Where was I? Are you Enya? It all started well enough, you know. You know, like, we all have the same goals. The lads and Enya and I, we all have the same goals, given, you know, trying to save the world and all that. But got so bloody competitive with her. You know, the lads and I would just do a benefit gig, raise money from Mongolian tsunami survivors or something like that. Do a 3-hour concert, raise £2 million. Enya would come in the next day, get off her private helicopter, play half a set, and triple the take. It was frustrating. I tell you. What do you mean there's never been a school there? Well, dig anyway. You're bound to strike water soon, and Lord knows another well would be welcome in this parched, godforsaken land. Breaks my heart to hear the children's throats cracked and dry, crying for a sip of water. Dig, dig, man. Come on, dig. No, where was I again? Oh, yeah, Enya. Anyway, the breaking point was when you two spent 3 months putting together a 3-day concert to raise money to buy, I think it was prosthetic limbs for Belizean frostbite victims, something like that. We raised £3.2 million to alleviate their suffering. Enya flew in the next day, landed her hovercraft next to our stage, sang that bloody Sail Away song, dropped the mic and walked away. Raised £12 million. She didn't need to rub my nose in it. After that, me and the lads, we decided we would never work with her again, no matter what the cost.
But through it all, there was one person Enya considered an equal, someone with whom she could expose her innermost self. American blues sensation Blind Willie Can't Smell Lemon Hatchet. The two had met backstage at an awards program where Blind Willie was being honored for his work with the charity group he'd founded, Hobos Without Borders. Sensing in the bluesman a kindred spirit, Enya suggested that the two go on tour together.
I tell you what, we were on tour back in October. Oh, I got to know her on a personal manner speaking. She was pretty nice. So, oh boy, some of them freaky hippy-dippy magic potion type things, yeah. Now, you know Blind Willie, I'm not too particular about what it is I drink now. But, she had some stuff, cosmos sort of thing. Oh, give me the hippy-dippy-sippy, oh boy. I took one drop, like, whoa, I saw her about to drink a spoonful. And I'm like, boy, and you slow down. Now, you have to understand one thing. Nobody tells Enya to slow down.
Even the notoriously hard-partying Willie was unable to turn a blind eye towards Enya's increasingly out-of-control use of homeopathic medicine.
Then she gets with the pink monkey flower and the pretty face. Now, these are concentrated essences of these particular urban substances and they're brewed out in a Tibetan laboratory in Peru.
After several attempts at intervention, Blind Willie, true to form, snuck out the back door of Enya's life, leaving her at a Wichita truck stop.
She got all down in the hole, on the pretty face, you know. I saw the damage it was doing to her energy field, and it just broke her Blind Willie's heart, it did, so I had to call off the tour early. I just went home, which is a bushes sort of place, and I downed some sterno when I found my own peace.
The two would never meet again. Abandoned by the only true friend she'd had in years, Enya began to realize her addiction had spun out of control. But the worst was yet to come. Still in a state of shock following Willie's departure, Enya learned of her inadvertent role in the now infamous Stockholm candle disaster.
Are you still too dumb for the
I tell you, I've been a fireman a long time, but I never saw anything like what happened that night. Local kid started the fire, said he'd heard voices after playing some Enya record backwards. I think it was Memory of Trees, I don't know. It took 12 hours to burn. No lives were lost, but by the end of the night, the factory was in ruins. The factory could have been saved. The fire was described as slow and mellow by eyewitnesses. The firefighters were hindered in our efforts by an overwhelming need to express our feelings, meet Ben and Jerry's. It was so relaxing to look at. I slept like a baby that night. The whole valley was covered for weeks with ash and sandalwood smell. To this day, everybody in town feels, I don't know, melancholy.
News of the disaster sent Enya over the edge, taking with her only a day bag filled with crystals, her jade neti pot, and a half-ounce bottle of Bach flower remedy to taper off. Enya walked away from her tour bus to begin her voyage of redemption on a lonely stretch of Texas highway. It was on that highway that fate again intervened by putting Enya in the path of discredited American self-help guru, James Arthur Ray. Ray had been driving east in an attempt to stay ahead of legal charges following the deaths of three participants at one of Ray's famed Sweat Your Way to Harmony camps in the Arizona desert.
I didn't know where I was going. All I knew is that if I didn't get out of Arizona, I'd be doing time. When I saw her standing on the highway, I figured she was just heading to Burning Man. I had no idea who she really was. I had never heard of Enya or her music.
On the long drive east, Enya and Ray would become close. Very close. Ray, himself no stranger to the perils of homeopathic medicine and crystal abuse, offered the kind of spiritual counsel that Enya needed. After a powerful cleansing sweat in a Motel 6 sauna in Durham, North Carolina, Enya announced that she had not merely kicked flower essences once and for all, but that she would also give up touring forever. Grateful to Ray for all he had done, she invited the American spiritual leader to return with her to Ireland to act as her personal guru. But Ray was so inspired by Enya's honesty that he decided instead to return to Arizona to face his own demons.
That might not have been the best idea, since I wound up going to jail for a couple of years, losing my reputation and pretty much all my money. In hindsight, going to Ireland with Enya might have been smarter. You wouldn't have never...
Back on home turf and feeling purified for the first time in decades, Enya felt the creative spark alight anew. She began work on her most ambitious project yet, a 7-hour New Age rock opera sung entirely in Pig Latin. She walked a lonely road, so very far from home. Though darkness had come, Enya believed. And through it all, this New Age diva has surely found her way. Next week on Behind the Sound, how Pokemon cards, pop rocks, and sibling rivalry nearly destroyed teen band Hanson.
Wow, you know, I just learned more about Enya than I ever wanted to know.
Even though her public image was always so pleasant, I didn't know she was cray-cray.
Yeah, who could have guessed?
Yes,
man,
wow.
Surprised about Blind Willie Can't Smell Lemon Hatchet.
That guy gets around, I have to say.
I kind of hope that he starts supporting us. See, we should start getting checks since we are the ones who found him.
I tell you, mark my words, his next album's gonna win a Grammy.
I hope so.
He sent me a preview, it's pretty amazing.
Awesome, really? Yeah. What are the song titles?
There's a song about Elk Rock Island in there. Pretty good. Song about parking on Burnside.
I think that I saw Blind Willie actually consuming chunks of Elk Rock Island last night in the heat wave.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Portland's a very temperate place, so when it gets hot, people just go crazy.
Mm-hmm. This is Failed Careers of Cultural Icons. Ooh.
Failed Careers of Cultural Icons?
Yeah.
Why does that sound familiar to me?
I don't know.
I don't want to watch it.
Oh, sounds interesting.
Okay. Sure, let's watch it.
Ladies and gents, hold on to your hats. It's Beck.
Bacon and Blakeman!
A country road, a tree, evening.
Well, Beckett, I'm going to New York. The Yankees manager hired me to make a film about the team.
Look, Bergman, if you're making a film, you must know all the players.
Can we ever truly know another person? Aren't we all isolated, following our whole lives through open space?
True. But all the same, you know, I've never met these guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but a name only marks the place that is slowly filling with the absence of love. Names are so particular.
You mean funny names?
Strange names.
I have forgotten my own mother's name. The ground so cold.
Ground so cold? Is it French?
People are French. Names are meaningless.
They make a sound like leaves.
Like sand.
Like leaves. Well, let's see. We have on the bags. Who's on first? What does it matter? On second? Can we ever knows on third?
That's what I want to find out.
This is what I have said. Who's on first? What does it matter on second? Can we ever knows on third?
Are you making this film?
At times I think it is making me.
And you don't know the fellow's names?
Each one is an accusation.
Then I beg you, who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The man on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
He who plays.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Go ahead and tell me. Or don't. Will night never come?
That's the catcher.
That's who?
No. Who's on first?
What does it matter?
He's on second base.
Who?
No. Who's on first?
Can we ever know?
Third base. We've nothing more to do here.
Nor anywhere else.
Don't go on like that. Tomorrow everything will be better.
Well, shall we go?
Yes, let's go.
Well, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
A little bit. I feel this sense of ennui.
I can see that. Like your cheese a little off. Wait a minute, there's more.
No, wait a second. This is all so familiar to me. I seem to be having a sense of déjà vu.
Déjà vu.
Next up, Me Contra Free.
In 1952, in response to the tremendous popularity of CBS's new hit TV show, I Love Lucy, due in large part to the dapper, suave, and Cuban-born Desi Arnaz, real-life husband of star Lucille Ball, rival network NBC decided to capitalize on the as-of-yet untapped and rapidly growing Hispanic demographic in America. To this end, they produced one and only one pilot episode of the disastrous and unfunny Me Encanta Frida, starring a still relatively unknown outside of the world of art, Frida Kahlo, considered a founding member of the school of Mexican folk art called Neo Mexicanissimo, and her much older but more famous husband, Diego Rivera, a muralist of some renown. Neither of the two had any previous theatrical experience, except their famed jealous rages and alcohol-fueled mutual batterings. It was a match made in television hell. What follows, then, is a clip from the aborted-at-birth pseudo-sitcom, Me Encanta Frida.
Me Encanta Frida.
Frida Kahlo y Diego Rivera.
Frida!
I'm home from the studio.
Why am I still?
I want to hit line dry.
Want to lose weight and keep eating? Just for you.
In my financial situation.
Before the liberations begin later.
Look, popular pie plan.
Back in the bag.
Fix it here.
Back in the bag. Back in the bag.
Puppet Radio Theater was written by Joshua Samuel Brown.
Twilight Kalisti, Sean Sorensen, Rick Deming, and B. Seth Brown. Puppet Radio Theater was produced by Joshua Samuel Brown and performed by Joshua Samuel Brown,
Victor Rattlehead,
Twilight Kalisti,
Mahatma Jones,
Isabella,
Sean Sorensen, Dan Zinder. Special thanks to Enda for providing the voice of Bono, and for Rick Deming for providing the voice of the quirky Swedish fireman. Puppet Radio Theater is a subsidiary of Soylent Co. Tune in to www.soylentco.com for all your Puppet Radio Theater and Soylent Co. related needs. Puppet Radio Theater's theme song, Candy Girl, was performed by the immortal Zug's Rift. Puppet Radio Theater is a production of KBOO 90.7, Portland, Oregon.
Hang on.
Did you get that?
And let me open these up.
Okay, get those damn puppets out of the air room. We've got a show to do. They always leave this place a fucking mess. They're so unprofessional. What's that? Why are you waving your arms at me like that?
The mic.
Speak up, I can't hear you.
Mike. Mike is hot.
What's that? Your kid's what?
The mic.
Mike who?
The microphone is on.
Shit. Why didn't anybody tell me? Who the hell left the mic on?
Okay. That'd be cool.
Yeah, it's on so that we can announce that this show,
Portland.
You are listening to the Ubu
KBOO
Hour Radio.
Portland.
Don't interrupt me.